This is Box Score, brought to you by Games Radar. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Unlike most sports simulations these days, there's a robust amount of tennis to be played on current generation consoles. Top Spin and Virtua Tennis franchises are alive and well, having released generally well-received games in 2011. EA Sports is now stepping into the genre with Grand Slam Tennis 2, the follow-up of sorts to the Wii-exclusive Grand Slam Tennis that came out in 2009. Instead of just taking the easy path, the team at EA has elected to reinvent the very traditional control scheme by introducing a stick-based racket mechanic very similar to its popular Fight Night and NHL games. I had a chance to speak with the game's producer, Thomas Singleton, a couple of weeks before the game's launch, and just a week after one of the most thrilling men's tennis finals ever in a Grand Slam tournament, an epic six-hour battle between Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal. Thomas Singleton and I discussed how and why the new controls were implemented. We dove into some of the details around online tournaments, career mode, and the classic Grand Slam modes, and some of the challenges he faced in trying to satisfy a lot of different people in a short amount of time. Stay tuned after the interview for some closing thoughts about Grand Slam Tennis 2. Okay, we are here with Thomas Singleton, the producer of EA Sports Grand Slam Tennis 2. It's coming out February 14th on the PS3 and the 360, and the demo is available now as well on the PlayStation Network and on Xbox Live. So first of all, Mr. Singleton, thank you very much for being on the show today.
It's my pleasure.
Before I get into much, I do have one question I want to ask, which is the game comes out on February 14th. So why are you trying to ruin my relationship with my wife by having this game come out on Valentine's Day?
Well, we think it's a product that you can enjoy with your wife.
you know,
it's a cross-gender sport in tennis, and there's not many sports like that, so.
That is true. Very good answer. So all kidding aside, yeah. So before we get into the game, I guess, Tom, I'd like to chat with you a little bit first about just kind of your background. How did you get into the games business, and sort of how did you make your way through the business to become the producer of Grand Slam Tennis 2?
Well, I've been with Electronic Arts now for 15 years. So back in, I think it was 96, I joined the company and started testing video games. It's just a video game fan myself. I played 2 years in college basketball. I really loved sports, very, very passionate about sports. So getting into a company like EA and EA Sports in particular, in the sports label, was really sort of a dream job of mine. So throughout the years, you know, I tested for, I think it was a year and a half to 2 years, and then I got into producing as an assistant producer on NBA Live back in, I think it was 99. Did NBA Live for a couple years, then a small core group of us broke away and did a product called NBA Street under the EA Sports Big Label, and that was a raging success. It was very a very cultural product. Loved that to death. Did the Street franchise for several years. Got into the original Fight Night back in Fight Night 2004. Brought some magic to that game. Was super happy about that. And then through the years, did various other products. Some Madden, a new IP called Playground that we did on the Wii. And then after that finished, we did the original Grand Slam Tennis that was exclusive to the Wii platform. Loved what that did. It was really built from the ground up for the Nintendo Wii audience. Super excited about that. Broke away and kind of tapped back into kind of my fitness background and jumped onto EA Sports Active, the second version. And once that wrapped up, it was a natural progression to get back onto Grand Slam Tennis and sequel that product, but on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. So that's kind of how, you know, that was the journey that I went on to get the Grand Slam Tennis 2.
So you have basically been able to take part in the creation of some of my all-time favorite games. That must be a pretty nice gig.
Not too bad.
You said you played 2 years of college ball. Where'd you play college basketball?
I played college basketball up here at Vancouver College up in Canada. So we played CIAA, came second in the nation my first year, then fifth in the nation my second year. And then I decided to have a family instead of pursuing my collegiate basketball dreams.
So do you, like, just dominate the pickup games going on at the EA Studios?
I get a little too competitive at the EA Studios, to be honest with you. So sometimes I forget that I'm actually just playing with coworkers and not other collegiate sport members. However, there's actually a pretty big install base of actual ex-collegiate athletes here at the office, so it makes for a good run.
Yeah, I can imagine that you probably have some pretty interesting games going on there on the court and probably some other sports as well.
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned NBA Street and its follow-up. Absolutely some of my all-time favorite games. The second game wasn't just Street 2, right? There was a tagline.
NBA Street. Yeah, it was NBA Street Volume 2.
Yeah, it was amazing.
That was the one where we had Stretch on the cover. It was, yes. We really, really got into kind of the history and the culture of street ball and pushing the envelope when it came to kind of the IP of the characters behind it and the legends, license, and that kind of stuff. So,
you know, if you could bring that back, do a little something to help that come back, that would be fantastic.
I'll see what I can do.
Very good. All right, but let's talk a little bit more. We are here to talk about Grand Slam Tennis, too. You're the producer of the game, and what would a producer do? What do you do, like, on a tennis game? I would imagine a tennis game is pretty different to put together in some ways than your more, I would say, traditional game, like a basketball game or a football game or something like that. So, you know, kind of maybe take us through a day in the life of what a producer does for this kind of game, maybe sort of like at the beginning stages, the middle stages, and the end stages of development.
Well, it is and it isn't different than other products that we make. I mean, at the end of the day, there are core systems underneath the hood that our consumers don't really know exist that are kind of driving everything that you see, hear, touch, feel, et cetera. So, in that aspect, it's not that much different. A producer is really responsible for leading the creative vision, setting up the team with his leadership team at the crux to that, assembling that team into the various disciplines, whether it's the gameplay team, the audio team, the rendering team, et cetera. And making sure that we have the right skill sets in place based on what we want to do creatively. And then obviously we go out and we work with our marketing and our PR partners and determine who our consumers want to be and what product they want and what platforms they want this product to be on based on the expectations that we have. And then we go ahead and we start to work with our creative directors and our designers at designing what the product wants to be and what the key new innovations are going to be. How we want the game to look with our art directors. We were fortunate to have our art director join us from Fight Night Champion, Jenny Freeman. She was the art director on that stellar visual masterpiece, I think. Join us on Grand Slam Tennis, too. So making sure that we get those people in the right place, designing that product. And then, you know, my job really is to champion the product and essentially sell it internally based on the feature set that we have to our key leadership group, to the likes of Andrew Wilson, who is our, you know, right at the top of the sports label, and make sure that he's bought in and invested in this product and what it wants to be. And then throughout the product, we always find that we never have enough time. We never have enough money. And my job is really to work through what needs to leave the product in order to get done on schedule. So it's not always the easiest job. So I'm probably the least popular person at certain parts of the project, but that's part of the job, right?
You know, you bring up.
Then I also
go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Then I, Yeah, and then I also have the luxury of working with the likes of Nike and Adidas and Sergio Tacchini and Head and Babolat and Wimbledon, the various agents of Roger Federer, John McEnroe, and making sure that each of those venues, players, apparel brands are represented within the product the way that they should be from an authenticity standpoint. Make sure that we're getting the latest, Nike stuff that Roger or Serena will be wearing in 2012, because nobody really cares about what they wore in 2011 and 2010. The story is what they're going to be wearing next year and what they're wearing in the product. And likewise for, what's going on at Wimbledon next year, who their brand partners are. So, I have to work with each of those parties to make sure that, from a relationship standpoint and an authenticity standpoint within the product, that everything's on point and looking that awesome.
You bring up something.
You were asking?
Yeah. So you bring up something very interesting. A couple things, actually. So I want to start off with the internal selling. I don't have a really good idea as to what that really means. I think a lot of people think that, okay, a game gets announced and it's already got the support and the vision and the design by it. Grand Slam Tennis 2, here it is, it's coming out. But it sounds like there's actually a lot of, you described it, internal selling, or sort of really kind of working all of the different levers of the organization to make sure that you've got the backing, you've got the resources that you need. Describe that process a little bit more, because I think there's a lot of people that don't even realize that anything like that actually happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, at its core, we're trying to create a product that's for the masses and for the consumer. So there are a lot of checks within our organization to make sure that we're building the right product, to make sure that we're delivering on that quality promise that we've promised to our consumers from EA Sports, right? EA Sports stands for something. So along the way, we have various milestones where we'll meet with, the various different groups, marketing, PR, all the way up to the senior sports leadership label group. All the way up to the top, to make sure that we're actually delivering on that promise and we're building the right product, at its core. I won't get too much into the details, because there's a lot of inner workings that we may not want to share.
Oh, sure.
Probably shouldn't share. That's okay. But, we're running a business, and, I think we do a fantastic job at that. And at its core, I think it's really a collaborative environment here, which is awesome.
And you mentioned that you're talking to a lot of people. You have a lot of different people to please, it sounds like, not only internally but externally. So I would imagine there are some times where you're probably getting conflicting needs and wants from different people, and managing that is going to be a little tricky sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when actually did you start working on Grand Slam 2? How long has it been sort of in the development process?
Grand Slam Tennis 2 has been in development probably a year and a half, about a year and a half. So I think as Fight Night Round 2 finished, or I'm sorry, Round 4 finished, not Round 2, was kind of when we, because the under the hood, the systems that are really running the machine come from Fight Night. So a lot of the development really started to kick off then.
So unlike some other sports, like notably the NFL, NCAA football, the NHL, tennis has several current sim series in the marketplace. What's some of the reasoning, or some of the, what's the general momentum behind participating in a, relatively speaking, in somewhat crowded arena?
There are a few titles within there, some of which are sims, some of which are arcade, and none of which are developed and created by EA Sports. I think if you're going to pick up a sports title, you should pick up an EA Sports title. So really getting into that market the way that EA Sports can, should, and has come February 14th is really what our goal was to do. There was sort of a, we didn't feel there was a lot of innovation going on in the tennis category for a long period of time. It was kind of the same thing with kind of a new roster, kind of the same thing with some issues from previous products addressed. We wanted a fresh new product, obviously bringing all four majors in the Grand Slams themselves. Was a huge thing for us, and bringing Wimbledon to the masses for the first time is amazing. So,
yeah, you know, you mentioned that, you know, having all four major tournaments is huge, because I don't think you've ever had a game where you had the Australian, the French, the U.S. Open, and Wimbledon all officially licensed. So how did you go about getting the license for Wimbledon, you know, the last holdout of sorts?
Well, I mean, we've got a fantastic relationship with a company called IMG. IMG is, you know, probably the world's largest group for managing professional athletes, professional tournaments. They also manage the Wimbledon relationship with and for us. So that relationship started back with Peter Moore and his relationship with that group. And, you know, became our relationship. So, you know, in that relationship, we started to work on negotiations with the likes of Wimbledon, with Roland Garros, with the USTA and the US Open and the Australian Open to round out all four majors. We didn't think that a tennis product brought to you by EA Sports without all four majors, because arguably those are the only tournaments that matter in the tennis world, no discredit to the others. But I'm sure any professional tennis athlete would tell you, if I could only play in four tournaments and qualify for them, I would be at those four and just those four.
Sure.
So that's kind of how things transpired.
Yeah, that's it was definitely something that, you know, any serious simulation has always sort of lacked, is having those four. The player roster is an interesting one. You have, and correct me if I'm wrong here with my my numbers, you have 8 current men, 4 current women, as well as 7 historical men, people like John McEnroe, Bjorn Borg, Boris Becker, and 4 historical women, such as Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert. So it seems like you have some of the must-haves, you know, Nadal, Djokovic, Federer, the Williamses, Sharapova. But there are some current players not on the roster. Are there any DLC plans for other current player or for other players, either current or historical?
At current time, we don't have plans for adding additional players. There aren't plans for DLC. We do have features within the product, like our game face feature, where you can scan a photograph of yourself in there. You know, while we don't promote certain things on people putting other people who aren't themselves in the product,
right?
There are tools in there for people to create the richest roster of all time if they so choose to. Sure. Within the product.
So one of the things that I'm just fascinated by is the rating. So for like the current players, what's the process to rate and grade each one to assign their attributes? Is that like, do you have one person who that's their job, or do you have a group of people? How does that all work?
Typically, it's a lot like we do on all other titles. Because our roster is the size that it is, one person can manage that. So they're kind of the resident tennis expert, that their sole purpose for being, or one of, is to keep tabs on what each player that's currently playing, or even the players from the past, the legends from the past, what they excelled at, what they were suffering at, and really balance the ratings, much like we've done in years past, and we continue to do for Madden, for NBA, for FIFA, et cetera. You know, it really is just data mining and taking that data and then putting it in the virtual world.
So for the historical players, are you giving them their attributes based upon like where they were at their peak? For example, is the Bjorn Borg in the game at his like absolute apex for that brief amount of time when he was the best player in the world? You know, John McEnroe, is it like when they were at their best, or the version of the guy that we're getting?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the ratings that we do coincide with the visuals. So, you know, we've created their likeness based on when they were in their prime. You know, John, you know, he still plays some doubles and some matches and that kind of stuff, but he's definitely not at the level he was at back when he was playing Bjorn Borg at, you know, Center Court Wimbledon in 1980.
Yeah.
So, you know, capturing them kind of in their prime was must-have for us. You know, I don't think anybody really wants to play as John McEnroe today.
Right, yeah. And speaking of the animations, I mean, I've been playing the demo quite a bit. It's really good. And by the way, just as an aside, having the demo be Djokovic and Nadal, you know, right at the same time that they played one of the greatest tennis matches in history in the Australian Open Finals, was, you had to be a little excited about the timing of that.
It wasn't an accident. we told them that this is what they need to do from a contractual obligation.
That's right.
They need to go for almost 6 hours, Center Court Finals, the Australian Open. Go.
Oh, that's great. That is great.
I'm joking.
The animations, the animations of the players, they are really slick. How do you go about capturing the individual, you know, like the visual traits of all these players? Is this motion capture? Is it film? Do you bring them in? Do you ask them questions? Do they, you know, how does that work to get the animations down?
Each of the animations that you see in the product are stemmed from motion capture. It would take far too long to bring each and every single one of the professional athletes in and capture their likeness as them being them. So instead, what we did was we got some amateur tennis players that are more like a Novak Djokovic, where they're really stellar at mimicking other people's styles. If you've ever seen him do his shtick, I mean, he can mimic anybody. And we were fortunate to get some men and women in here that were very similar in their abilities. So they would come in, we would review a lot of footage and study the various players, their different styles, their different swing mechanics, because each person is a little bit different. And then we captured that using motion capture. And then if we weren't happy with it, we would, you know, we'd keyframe a little bit and kind of add a little, you know, an extra to it to kind of beef it up a little bit, much like you would in a movie in post. It's kind of the process that we went through.
So let's talk controls. You said a little earlier in the show, you know, nobody's quite, you know, or you said, you know, the games out there so far have kind of been the same. And the Grand Slam for the Wii was very different controls. And now Grand Slam 2 is clearly, to me, built around, you know, innovative controls. I mean, to me, the Total Racket, that's what it's called, by the way, Total Racket control, they're similar to NHL and Fight Night. And you even mentioned some of the core systems in Fight Night are driving this game. So, but they're similar in that you control the racket with the right stick. So I guess first question about the controls is, what drove the decision to create these controls?
Well, much like we did in our NHL franchise, in our fighting franchise, Skate was another franchise that really took a genre that had existed for some time and made a conscious decision to really change the way the game is played. So much like we did for Fight Night, we looked at the analog sticks as an opportunity to simplify things and make it much more intuitive than it has been in the past, but in a meaningful way. So separating the left analog stick as your movement and turning the right analog stick essentially into your racket was really our goal, but not making it complex, not making it so the right analog movements needed to be movements that were sort of replacing a button sequence like a traditional fighting game, as an example, but just making it simple to the core and intuitive and responsive. And that's kind of the result that we came up with. Obviously, there were several prototypes along the way. Some of them hit the floor. A lot of them stayed in the product. You know, aiming and responsiveness was number one, because after all, tennis is a 3D version of Pong, and it doesn't get any simpler that's the first video game made of all time.
Yep.
So trying to aim the ball past your opponent is really the objective within the sport of tennis. And it is within our game. So getting that aiming down and feeling responsive and feeling intuitive. Then we layered in the ability to control various shot types from flat to top spin to slice as the various layers of depth within the onion of our controls. And then the final piece was various more difficult advanced shots like lobs and drop shots, which we decided to use a modifier system for. The button system and the classic controls, there are a lot of people out there that love to play their video games in a hardcore way using buttons. So we didn't want to alienate that group either. So we kept those classic controls within the product, so essentially offering the best of both worlds. While we, you know, truly believe in our innovation in Total Racket Control, we know that there will be some people out there that really prefer buttons, and that's just the way they are.
Sure. Now, my experience, and you know, I am not the most skilled player in the world, as my online record will sadly show. But my experience is that it's easy to play the game right away, but it's not easy to pick it up and be great right away using the Total Racket Control. There's a challenge involved to learn and then master them. So to me, it's a pretty gutsy choice in that players need to spend the time to really learn how to take advantage of them. Now, my assumption is that when you really get pretty good at them, particularly when you're playing with some highly skilled players, you can really do some things that you probably couldn't do in some previous versions of the game. So is it your sense that the typical Grand Slam 2 player is perhaps more of a dedicated to this kind of commitment than, say, a casual football or a hockey fan?
Yeah, absolutely. It was no accident that you're feeling what you're feeling, but over time and investment and training within the product, just like in a real sport of tennis, as you start to understand exactly what level of softness you should be performing your drop shots or how and when you should be performing slices versus top spins, et cetera, it will really advance you within the game, and that was no accident. You know, there are you know, it's easy to pick up and play, but difficult to master, and that's, you know, a real recipe for success, in my opinion, in any game, because if you're an immediate all-star at it, you're just dominating everybody, and there's no real goal for you to reach next,
sure,
both within the game and in the real world. I think creating an environment that is challenging, but there's no barrier of entry is what our recipe was, is a key to success, yep, for sure.
Definitely. So what is, I guess, to kind of summarize the Total Racket Control, what does it offer that you just can't get out of your more traditional button controls?
Well, the one thing that the traditional button control does for me, when I've played other products and even in our product, is there's this constant battle between two sides of the brain, one being my player movement in my left hand and the other being my shot selection on my right hand, and then having to transition in my left hand from player movement into ball aiming. So it's kind of like you're the timing of which your two halves of the brain and your hands need to speak to each other need to be that much on point and that much more in line when using a classic controller experience, because navigation turns into aiming. And that's the, you know, it's the right solution for a button control, but in my opinion, it's not the ideal solution. I think Total Racket Control, by completely segregating the two halves, movement on the left and aiming and shot type on the right, you're allowing the two halves of your brain and your two hands to kind of work together as opposed to having to switch back and forth to responsibilities.
Interesting. And I agree, too. I mean, it's funny. It's like I play certain games a certain way, and then I remember when NHL came out with the, you know, the shot sticks, and when Fight Night came out with, you know, it's, you know, hitting with the sticks, and I just remember thinking to myself, I can't believe it's taken this long for this to happen because it just felt so natural. But even, you know, NHL and Fight Night, same thing. You know, challenging games. Fight Night in particular, to me, is a big challenge. But ultimately, the controls make it a better game. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're going for here. So, very cool. Now,
absolutely,
the PlayStation 3 version also offers PlayStation Move controls. And from what I've seen, actually, some pretty significant ones. These are not just sort of, we support Move. This looks pretty in-depth with the Move. So maybe you can explain a little bit about how the Move is similar to and also perhaps different than the Total Racket Control when, you know, top spins and drop shots, slices and serving and things like that.
Absolutely. So from a similar standpoint, I mean, they're one and the same in the fact that the Move controls aiming at its core and the various shot types, but how you trigger those is where things differ. Okay, so all the shot types from flat to slice to top spin to drop shot to lobs, the ability to aim shots down the line or cross court are all there. Okay, identical to Total Racket Control, everything at your fingertips.
Right,
but where things vary, I'm now, you know, live in my living room actually performing tennis strokes from a gesture standpoint. Okay, so if I want to hit a flat shot down the line, I'm simply going to swing parallel to the ground straight forward if I'm right-handed, straight forward. And if I want to aim down the line, I would leave the tip of the Move controller open. So essentially my racket face, I would leave that racket face open facing down the line. If I wanted to hit that same flat shot across court, I would turn my wrist over and cross my body with that racket face, just like I would in real tennis. To hit top spin shots, I simply swing my racket from low to high, essentially swinging up and over top of the ball, hence the term top spin. Or to hit slice shots, I would simply hold my racket high and then slice down towards the ball and hit a slice shot. You know, much like the drop shots and the lobs and Total Racket Control system, we use a modifier system when it comes to the Move device as well. One of the things that we did, and it was a learning that we had from the original Grand Slam tennis, at the core experience when it comes to Move, it really is a more social, casual experience. You love to play Move and gesture controls when other people are in the room because you like to get up out of your seat and have some fun.
Right.
Go head to head in split screen and kind of laugh at each other and the fact that you're actually breaking a sweat and having a great time playing tennis in the virtual world without having to worry about all the footwork and run around the court. So in this system, it really is a pick up and play kind of casual experience. Versus the more, you know, hardcore experience in Total Racket Control or the classic buttons for that matter, where you can physically sit down on the couch and play through long periods and long sessions.
Gotcha.
You know, what we did with the Move system at default is we take care of the player movement for you. So you don't have to worry about running your character around the court like you do with Total Racket Control and Classic. That's taken care of for you. But you do have the ability to rush the net or back off the net by simply pressing either the square button to rush the net or the X button to back off of the net. But if you did want full control over player movement, you can plug in the navigation controller and use that in unison with the Move controller itself.
That's a lot of time spent on controls. I mean, really, you've got three separate control elements. So clearly, this was the main focus of the game. I got to imagine you guys have dedicated quite a lot of resources to building this out and testing it. Because, man, three separate control types is a lot.
Absolutely. But at the end of the day, if you pick up any video game and the controls don't feel right, play right, aren't responsive, and it's not engaging, you put it down and you walk away. That's what happens.
All right, so here's the hard question. Gun to your head, You have to pick your favorite of the three: Total Racket Control, Move, or the buttons.
Total Racket Control, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so kind of the moving on a little bit. I love the fact that you've got a series of the historical matchups in here. As a guy who just, you know, for example, NBA, the NBA 2K12 with the legendary games between all the old teams, and, you know, a guy who back in the day used to love playing the old, you know, Super Bowl teams and Madden and so on. I've always had an affinity for being able to kind of go back in time. So you have a mode in the game called Grand Slam Classics. Talk to me a little bit about this feature. You know, what was sort of the idea behind it, and then how did you go about sort of, you know, finding your favorite matchups to represent?
Yeah, there were a couple of things behind the creation of Grand Slam Classics, one of which were the fact that we had not only legends from the past, but also from the present. And there's a lot of history behind the sport of tennis. So, you know, tennis matches that were epic in like the match that we just witnessed between Rafa and Novak, I mean, you know, they don't come around too often. And those rivalries are just that. They're rivalries, and they've happened over a period of time. So really capturing those rivalries, capturing the history, you know, the epicness of those matches in particular was a goal for us. And then from a gaming standpoint, there are a lot of consumers out there that don't want to play through entire long matches. So giving them a more bite-sized experience where we drop them into a match already in progress with the objective and challenge to finish off the match and relive that piece of history and then unlock additional eras within three decades of those epic matches is kind of what it's about for them. So it's kind of the metagame behind the game. You know, we think the feature is awesome. It's got some great matches in there. Obviously, there you know, are probably additional matches that could be in there. We just witnessed one last weekend. They're not in there now from a downloadable content. Unfortunately, you know, we're not planning any downloadable content right now. But who knows what sequels will hold, right?
Sure, absolutely. So how did you go about, like, figuring out which specific matchups to put in the game? I mean, do you just kind of sit around the room and kind of go back and look at your roster and see where some of them happened? Or did you already know, like, right off the bat, as soon as, you know, as soon as you figured out you were even going to have this feature, like, oh, we're getting Borg McEnroe 1980 number one. How did that, how'd you whittle them down?
Absolutely. There were some very, very obvious ones. You know, a lot of the decisions were based on the licensed players that we have within the product. There are even some fantasy, matches that are in there, in watching some of the current stars play some of the legends in their prime. I won't tip the cards on what they are because they're unlockable.
Nice.
So once you get the product, you can check those out. But you know, there's something in it for everyone, and it was a fun job of picking the matches. Like I said, some of them were very obvious. Some of them were just favorites of members of the team, etc.
So online is obviously also a big part of Grand Slam too. What are the different modes? You know, what do you got cooking for online play?
Well, online at its core, I mean, it doesn't get any more fun and basic, but I mean, it is what online is. It's you can jump in immediately and play singles head to head or doubles head to head. We've got single elimination tournaments that you can join in. So jump into a tournament against others around the world. Once you lose, you're out. Jump back into another tournament. We've got a feature called Grand Slam Corner, which is essentially a location that you can go to dominate a various venue that you want to, whether it be Wimbledon or Roland Garros, and take on the rest of the world within Roland Garros as the tournament that you're trying to dominate. And then track your progress within that leaderboard, within the Grand Slam corner. Then there are other various leaderboards. Battle of the Nations is a feature that we support, something that you've seen in FIFA in the past where each and every time you play, based on which nation you're representing, your successes and lack thereof will grade against your nation and how your nation competes against others around the world.
United States is in trouble.
Not if their gamers are really good.
Well, I mean, if I'm participating, which I will, it's already...
Oh, I see what you say. So you're going to bring it down then. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Others will have to pick up the slack for you. It's all good. And then we've got features like our game phase feature, which allow you, again, to put yourself literally within the product and share yourself or other pro players or creative players that you've created with other people around the world using our feature called Share Pro. So you can create whatever roster you want and share those with others around the world.
Nice.
So a lot to do in online.
So do competing players online have to use the same control options, or can somebody, if I'm playing on PS3, can I be using Total Rack and they can be using Move or the buttons? It doesn't matter. Do you kind of force the different controls to be used when playing against each other?
No, absolutely not. Choose your weapon. Like you said, gun to my head, I'm playing Total Rack to control. Somebody else could be playing buttons. You and I could be playing together at my house while you're playing with Move against two others using classic controls at their home.
Okay.
It's whatever you want to do.
So I love the idea of tournaments. I mean, obviously tennis is built around tournaments, so being able to have them, you know, online is really cool. And if I read this correctly, you can have up to 8 real people in a tournament, and maybe that's just one particular type of tournament. So maybe if you could talk a little bit about the logistics here of these tournaments, how the head-to-head matches will work. Do they have to be scheduled? Can you jump in and play? Like, you know, how's that work?
Yeah, so the tournament mode itself in particular, are we talking offline or online?
I guess, well, we'll start with online, but maybe if, you know, offline as well after that.
Yeah, so online is really, you know, there are various matches that will go on. They'll take place. If you're losing, obviously you're out. You know, there will be a schedule kind of involved with that. The offline portion is really about if we've got up to 8 people at our house, we can assign 8 users into whether it's a 128 tournament, a 64 person tournament, a 32 person tournament. You can jump into the various trees at that point within each of the venues, whether it be Wimbledon, Roland Garros, the Australian Open, US Open. There are 4 additional courts that we've created outside of those 4 that are kind of EA courts, if you want to play on those surfaces as well. But the way that tournament works is it really is one of just letting the computer, i.e. tournament tree, know which players are going to be user-controlled versus CPU-controlled. Obviously, the CPU games will be simulated for you. And then when it comes time to the user-controlled players, obviously you'll have to remember which player you are. Whether you're Roger Federer or yourself as a creative player. And then as your matches come up, you will either play other computer players or other users, depending on how the tree goes down. Obviously, your goal is to win your matches. So if we did jump into a 32-person tournament overall, that is all users playing in the final matches of the actual tournament.
Man, cool. Like that. All right, I'm going to jump into some listener questions, but right before I do that, any other sort of, you know, high level or, you know, interesting new features or something like that you wanted to mention before we jump in sort of the last few questions in the show?
Yeah, well, one thing we didn't talk about was, you know, our career mode within Grand Slam tennis too. I mean, it's very representative of what you would expect in any career mode from a depth standpoint from EA Sports. I mean, it's got the ability, again, to get yourself in the game, you know, create your player using Game Face or not, get yourself in there, and then go on your journey to become the next Grand Slam champion. So, sure, Roger's done it several times. Sure, Rafa's done it, McEnroe and Navratilova. And that's awesome. But I, Thomas Singleton, want to go and get ranked number 1 myself.
Right.
And dominate each of the Grand Slam venues myself. along that journey, John McEnroe is not only the commentator within the product, together with Pat Cash, but he's also the training expert within our training sessions within your career and outside of your career. The more I train within my career, the more my attributes of my character, Thomas Singleton, will grow. So obviously, just like in the real sport of tennis, if I don't train, well, I'm not going to get any better from an attribute standpoint. Then I can also select to participate in exhibition matches. Those exhibition matches can turn into rivalries against other players within my career. So now I'm developing my own rivalries, much like the Rafa and Novak rivalry that's becoming a huge one right now in the sport of tennis. You know, those exhibition matches will unlock additional gear for myself. And obviously, the better tennis shoes and nicer tennis rackets I have, the better I'm going to play, because it's got to be the shoes, right? And then the final piece are the pre-tournaments. And pre-tournaments are really designed to not only prepare me for the Grand Slam tournament itself, but also to help increase my ranking, right? So as I finish tournaments as a winner, my ranking will increase. And then my seed within the upcoming tournament, and in the case of this past January here, the Australian Open, well, I would enter that Australian Open tournament as a higher seed, as a higher-ranked player. Therefore, the competition that I play will be weaker. And that's kind of the goal, right? There's no accident that, you know, Roger, Rafa, Novak, you know, Maria Sharapova make it to the later rounds. It's because in the early rounds, they're not playing against the toughest competition, and they've earned that right. So it's very similar in the product.
You know, you mentioned
so, I mean, that's...
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, and that's essentially what the career mode's all about. And it's probably the deepest, richest single-player experience within the product. Like we talked about, there's Grand Slam Classics, the tournament mode, online, et cetera. You know, so there's a lot to do within Grand Slam tennis, too.
You know, you mentioned the training, and it's something that I appreciate when a sports game really teaches you how to play the game. Not just, you know, simple training, like here's how to hit a topspin, here's how to hit a slice, but, you know, here is the actual, like, here's how you really execute this well. Here's when you want to execute this kind of shot. You mentioned John McEnroe takes you through the training. All John McEnroe did to me during the demo was yell at me because I was playing so badly. But, you know, that's John McEnroe. I understand that. But, you know, in the training itself, like, how deep is the training? Like, you know, does it really teach you how to play the game the right way as opposed to just sort of, you know, simple, here's how the controls work, go at it?
It concentrates primarily on how to utilize the controls. With the innovation of Total Racket Control, with the way our system works, and even the classic buttons for that matter, and the move controls for that matter, it's really concentrating more on the control aspect versus going super deep into teaching you the sport of tennis. Obviously, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there are certain decisions that we have to make along the way to get the product done and out the door.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of one of those decisions. We definitely can and will go deeper when and if a sequel of this product comes out.
Right.
But we're really happy with where things netted out from teaching you the controls and allowing you to kind of manipulate them to the point where you become an expert.
Yeah,
and then there's also the ball machine and the ability to go in and just hit balls against a ball machine in practice as well.
Yeah, I know that's in the demo, which is nice. I was very sad that the training, which you in the menu item you can see it, but you can't click on it. I wasn't so much learning learning about the sport of tennis, but you know, just the fact that you do have, it sounds like a pretty deep training mode in there is huge, especially in a game like this where, you know, there is so much nuance to the racket controls, you know, the slices, the top spins, and, you know, you can go in, it feels like at least 6 different directions, you know, as far as when you're directionally aiming it. So, you know, I need a lot of training. That's all I'm going to say. I need a lot of help.
But I'm looking training is there for people like yourself.
Good deal. All right. Before we wrap it up, a couple questions from some listeners. Twitter questions. One guy, Billy Joe Bob, it's a great one, wants to know about the different surfaces. He said, how differently does the game play on clay, hard court, and grass?
It plays as you would expect it to and as it does in real life. So obviously the clay surface is the slowest of all three surfaces. The ball bounces a little slower. Your speed attributes will benefit you on that surface. There's no accident that Rafa's been winning that tournament for the last 6 years. And will probably continue to do so again this year, unless Novak has something to say about it. The grass surface plays as the fastest surface of all three of the surfaces, as it does in real life. So the ball will skip off of that surface from a physics standpoint, as it does in real life. And then the hard court is in between. So it's the physics of the ball, the shoe squeaks, the sounds, the aesthetics. The clay will kick up as you slide across it, as you get pushed from side to side. So there is a difference within the product for sure.
So it does sound like not only does the game play differently, but certain players are probably just better dispositioned to win on their stronger surfaces.
You got it. We obviously didn't want to make it so that they're unbeatable, but there is a difference within there for sure.
Nice. Another question from the Twitter handle, Jay Buckrich. Is there now or will there ever be grunting as a feature?
You can grunt all you want in your living room as you're playing, but within the product, because grunting is a part of the sport. I mean, when you pick up the product and if you play the demo, you definitely hear Rafa as Rafa and Novak as Novak.
Yes.
I mean, there's a definite difference in playing each of the players. I mean, if you've ever had the pleasure of going to a Maria Sharapova match, you can almost know what's happening in the match without even watching. So it's pretty interesting, and grunting is a part of the game. As far as getting your grunts in the game, well, I mean, feel free to grunt along.
The last one from that sports gamer. He wants to know. He wants Grand Slam Tennis 2 on the Vita. He's instructed me to hold you hostage until that happens. Unfortunately, we're not in the same place, so I can't do that. Do you have any plans for Grand Slam on the Vita?
Vita's an awesome device. You know, I FIFA's coming out on that device. It's looking amazing. Do we have current plans? No. Are we excited about new platforms and new opportunities for all of our franchises? Absolutely. You know, is it something that we'll look into? We look into every opportunity out there for sure.
Good to know. All right. Well, Thomas Singleton, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule. You're less than 2 weeks away from launch, and spending an hour with me is probably not at the top of your list of priorities. So thank you very much. The Grand Slam Tennis 2 comes out on February 14th for the 360 and the PlayStation 3. And look for it. I'm buying it. I can't wait. I'm very excited about this. I'm just can't wait to sink my teeth into it, even though so far my success level has not been where I would like it to be. I got some work to do, but that's all right. So thank you again very much. I appreciate your time, and good luck with the game.
No problem. It was my pleasure, and I hope everybody enjoys the product as much as we do.
I spent a lot of time with the demo for Grand Slam Tennis 2, and I've come away impressed and excited to see the full game in action. While it is a little disappointing there's no DLC planned and the roster does appear a bit thin, there does look to be plenty of content to be had, and of course there's a significantly new control style to master. But we'll know soon enough how good Grand Slam Tennis 2 is, that's for sure. That puts a wrap on this episode of Box Score, brought to you by Games Radar. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Follow me on Twitter at Rich Grisham, and follow Games Radar at Games Radar. And also, be sure to read my weekly column, Box Score, which comes out each and every Thursday on the site. Remember, every click counts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.